This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. In 1944, Nazi soldiers sent Zev Harel and his family to Auschwitz. He was 14 years old. Harel stayed alive by lying about his age. He endured a 400-mile trip to the Ebensee concentration camp in Austria, where he was forced to build underground storage tunnels for Nazi weapons. When American troops liberated the camp a year later, Zev was found lying in a ditch. He had typhoid. He was nearly dead. An American soldier picked him up, got him to a doctor, and he recovered. 70 years later, the horrific stories of survivors like Zev Harel live on through North Carolina's yearly remembrance of the Holocaust. Zev Harel will be speaking on Sunday at Meredith College in Raleigh for this year's North Carolina Holocaust Observance. But first, he joins me from his home in Greensboro. Zev Harel, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Mike Abramson. He is the chair of the North Carolina Council on the Holocaust. Mike Abramson, welcome. Good to have you here as well.
Thank you, Frank.
Zev, tell us about your childhood years. You were sent to Auschwitz and then Ebensee. You evaded the SS until 1944. How were you able to do that?
Well, as you have indicated in your introductory statement, obviously what was occurring then in those years was hard to endure. And I've been asked on a number of occasions, how did you survive? And my honest answer is, I really don't know. My luck, in a way, probably has to do either with genetics, but also a little bit with the environment. As I was growing up, my grandfather, who dressed in peace, he was doing all the yard work, and I was following him and doing what I could, climbing trees and whatever work we had to do. So apparently I had a little muscle power. But the other good thing that happened to me is when I got to Auschwitz, as I was working toward the selection, there was one of the guards there, and not too many would do that, but one of the guards there asked me, how old are you? And I told him the truth, which it was 14. I was 14 years old because I was born in 1930. And he looked at me, he said, when you go to the selection, say you are 17. I don't know how that came about, but lucky for me, when I came to the selection process, I told them that I was 17 years old, and that's why I was not sent as those that were either 15 years or younger or 50 years or older toward the crematoriums that were there, because at the Nazi sites, there were either the work camps or the extermination camps. At Auschwitz, along with the selection, were the, obviously, the extermination equipment that they had there. And it was very sophisticated because, you know, people would be sent in and it looked like you're going to open a shower, but instead of opening shower for water to come in, gas came in, and then all those that were in, their life ended, and they would be then technically pushed toward where they would be burned in the crematorium. So fortunately for me, I didn't stay there, but I was sent along with the others that were selected for work to first Mauthausen and then Ebensee. And at Ebensee, I worked in two sites. The first one was at the site that was supposed to produce an underground tunnel. So, you know, imagine a 14-year-old kid working with air hammer and doing all the sophisticated work in order to develop an underground tunnel. But the Nazis wanted to build there an underground tunnel in order to hide there all the military equipment that they didn't want to be in any kind of way exposed to dangers. So that was my first work detail. And
well, you were also, as I understand it, you also were sort of on a kind of kitchen crew when there were stately dinners or special dinners. You were part of the crew that would set the table. Is that right?
Well, what happened is that after 6 months working in the tunnel, I worked at another work detail where we were supposed to generate construction materials. And there they sent me to once a week to clean the barn of the owner of the guest house that was also the owner of the Kiesgrube, of the production of construction materials. And there, you know, because being an inmate would not trust me to go by myself. So obviously an SS guard followed me, and the owners of the guest house would set up a nice table for the SS guard. The daughter of the guest house there, she was a, you know, so-called righteous young kid. She was a little older than me, but about 15 years old. And she would always, when she would set up the table for the SS guard, she would also bring me some food. So once a week, in addition to whatever we didn't have what to eat, I got a little food to eat from this righteous person.
Tell us about the day that your camp was liberated.
Well, liberation came, and it was just a very, very exciting kind of observation to look at the American tanks come toward the our camp and the military equipment, what they had. But apparently I was with typhoid because I wanted to go out of the camp and go toward the site where I worked in order to protect the good deed that they have done for me. But as I was walking out of the camp, I fell into a ditch. And that's what I remembered. But when I came back, it was about 2 weeks after liberation, the nurse that was at the hospital, a young African-American soldier, they were not integrated yet. You know, 1944, there were some military units of African-Americans that fought, but they were just attached to the 3rd Cavalry, the unit that I was liberated. But this young African-American man picked me up from a ditch, took me to the hospital about 16 miles away from the camp. When I came back, the nurse there said to me, "Ein schwarzer Soldat, a black soldier, brought you here." Well, that's where I came back after my typhoid encounter, and that's how I remember liberation.
And I understand, as in addition to someone who wants us to remember the Holocaust, who continues to tell his story about that horrific experience, about that catastrophe, you've also become a civil rights advocate. Is that as a result of that experience in that hospital?
Well, my good fortune that, and I'm thankful first for the 3rd Cavalry that liberated me. I'm thankful for this young African-American soldier. And then good things happened to me that I got to be first with the Palestine Jewish Brigade assisting illegal immigration to Palestine, and that's what brought me to Palestine, and then had the good fortune of fighting with the War of Independence and contributing to the establishment of the State of Israel. But after a few years in Israel, and even though I had only 4 years of elementary school, I had to study for and pass high school equivalency in order to be able to go to college, because in Israel you cannot attend college without a high school degree. But after I got my undergrad, a high school equivalency, then my undergrad degree, my good fortune brought me here to the United States in 1965 because of the benevolence of this country. And what I like to emphasize, that in addition to today's diversity and other good things, opportunity structure, there's also benevolence in this country. There's no other place in the world that's like such. So that's what brought me to the United States, and I had the good fortune of getting my master's degree and then my PhD and then becoming a professor at Cleveland State University. I tried to find this young man that I owed my life for, but couldn't find him, even though Congressman Lewis Stokes, an African-American congressman, and Glenn, Senator, and Voinovich, they tried to help me but couldn't find. So I tried to figure out what can I do in order to be thankful. And so in Cleveland, there was the director of the services for seniors by the name of Anna V. Brown. So we put our heads together, and she assisted me in establishing what we call the Anna V. Brown Community Forum. And that was supposed to find the needs of African Americans in the Cleveland area and find better ways of assisting services. And we established that about 40 years ago. And to this day, if you type in on the internet, Anna V. Brown Community Forum, it's still there year after year. So I'm very, very pleased that I was able to do this little thing in order to thank the young African American that I could not find him.
Zev, I wonder how much of this you've clearly this was an act out of gratitude that you started this group. To what extent did you also see a connection between the persecution of African Americans here and the persecution of Jews? Was that any part of this?
Well, obviously, you know, having had the good fortune, and, you know, when I think back, obviously there was a lot of evil that was done against Jewish persons all over Europe, and Nazi Germany, even though they were one of the more enlightened countries in the 20th century, but they were able to get assistance in order to do all the evil acts that they have done. And, you know, just that the audience has a little sense of 11 million persons were exterminated by the Nazis, among them 6 million members of my own faith. And I talked before about the age. 1.5 million children, and the evil Nazis of those days, I mean, to just take children and put them in extermination sites, I mean, it's just unbelievable that, you know, such evil could be carried out, and there was no one that would stand up until with the goodwill of President Roosevelt, when the American forces went to fight against the Nazis and bring about their ultimate defeat. And, you know, again, what I would like to just tell whoever is listening, think what this world would have been like had it not been for the forces, the U.S. forces and the other forces that fought against and brought about the defeat of the Nazis. What this world would have been had the Nazis been successful in what they wanted to do.
Well, Mike Abramson, I think that's the importance of keeping these stories alive and keeping this memory alive. How do you do this now in the 21st century?
Well, Mike,
Yeah, go ahead, Zev.
My good fortune that I'm here. And before you ask me about, you know, I have had the good fortune of being able to work in education and contribute to having all those that could do what they could do. And then being a professor of social work and gerontology, doing what we can could do in Northeast Ohio in order to make the life of African American better. And I thought that that would be a little way of being able to be thankful for owing my life to that young African-American that took me from the ditch to the hospital.
Mike Abramson?
Sure. Frank, thank you again for having me here. You know, I'm struck when I listen to survivors like Zev, who I know well, and my mother, who was a survivor. There seems to be just a number of attributes that survivors have, and that's luck, their will to live, and a righteous Gentile or a very good person that helped save their lives. My mother also was actually rescued by an African-American orderly, just like Zev. And I noticed with so many American survivors, they're very liberal on African-American civil rights and the civil rights issues of the 60s because they saw what indifference and hate happened. They saw that, real life. So to answer your question, what the Holocaust Council does today is that we teach teachers how to teach the Holocaust and the values and lessons learned of the Holocaust. We help students develop the values of pluralism, tolerance, and diversity. And we show the students that silence and indifference will perpetuate problems in society for them to speak up. And we also teach the students and the teachers that democratic institutions and values are not automatically sustained, but need to be appreciated, nurtured, and protected. So we get the value of political silence, the political science, and getting involved in the community of tolerance, anti-bullying, in these schools and in the community. And that's how we try to keep the Holocaust commemoration alive today.
We are talking about keeping the memory of the Holocaust alive today on The State of Things. My guest, Mike Abramson, chair of the North Carolina Council on the Holocaust. Zev Harrell is a Holocaust survivor. Zev, let me ask you, you know, you talked about the people along the way, an SS officer's daughter who helped you, a guard who told you to lie about your age, and yet there were so many good German citizens who were complicit in all of this. And so we have this really complex picture of good people among within all of that evil playing against type. And so many God-fearing Christians going to their Lutheran churches, all complicit in this. It can happen again today. This is not some evil that dropped out of the sky. This is the kind of evil that happens in the midst of any of us as long as we're human beings. Zev, am I right about is that? Am I right about that?
Very, very much right. And one of the reasons that I do what I can and being thankful that I'm here and, you know, at the age of 85, the reason that I do what I try to do in Holocaust education is because of the memories of what those days were like and how more of the enlightened nations of those days in Europe has spearheaded the evil acts of destruction. So it's always important to keep in mind, and I had the good fortune of being able to do some of that, of making the small dents in the thinking of persons of how to make the world that we are part of a little better. And obviously what's important to realize that the United States of today has a history, but also it has a present and a future. And anything that we can do to make the small dents in the thinking of the teachers, in the thinking of the young persons who will be our future citizens tomorrow, of how to make this country that has the best diversity, this country that has the land of opportunity, this country that has all the benevolence that it has, how to make this country a little better in the future. And so it's important to learn the lessons from the past in order to put the perspectives of that experience. And whenever I speak to audiences, I like to emphasize three things. One, remember what happened then and how that became possible. Do all that you can not to let any of the evil things occur, and some of the not-so-pleasant things that this country has to remember. Make sure that what we have accomplished and what we have today, that we go ahead for better and not stay there. And the other thing that's also important to underscore is to honor the memories of those that serve the importance and the needs of this country.
Zev Harrell, thank you so much. A retired social worker and survivor of Auschwitz and Ebensee concentration camps in Nazi Germany. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you for having me here.
Mike Abramson is the chair of the North Carolina Council on the Holocaust. Mike, thanks so much for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you, Frank.
Just ahead, the music of the sufferers. Stay tuned.